You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, Calvin Butenoff, coming to you live from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same at 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our next guest is a senior editorial director at Vox. He oversees the climate teams, also the Unexplainable and Gray Area podcasts. He's also the editor of Vox's Future Perfect section and writes the Good News newsletter. Brian Walsh is joining us. Good morning, Brian. Thanks so much for making time for us. How are you this morning?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Brian, we saw this article that you did, and we talk a lot about this. We've talked about this off the air and about why we are so drawn as a human species to bad news. We are just, there is something within us that's what generates clicks. We have entire media ecosystems that are based on creating outrage, and it works. What is it about bad news that we love so much?
You know, I think what it is about bad news is that it starts with a few levels. One is inside us. You know, I think human beings, maybe go all the way back in evolution here, we are almost trained to identify threats, identify bad things, because for a very long time, we lived in an environment where something bad could have very catastrophic consequences for you quite immediately. And so if you weren't pegged to that, if you weren't looking for that, you might not last very long. So you have that to begin with. And then I think, you know, when it comes to the audience more on a whole, I think this has been something demonstrated. Like, you can literally see studies that say if you give people a headline that's positive, if you give people a headline that's negative, they are more likely to click on the negative. I think hitting into that physiological reaction almost. In fact, like, we really know that's the case. It activates us. And we see that in our social media. We see that in our media. And then the media itself, you know, responds to that, I think. For one thing, we do respond to what the audience does. And so if the audience is more likely to respond to bad news, that's something we're more likely to report to it. But also, it's something we're trained to do as well. Like, we are out there looking for what's going wrong in the world. In fact, if anything, that's a definition of news. It's what's going on in the world that's going badly. So put all that together and you have a self-reinforcing ecosystem that just emphasizes the negative and really especially ignores longer term under the radar positive trends, just because they're not changing much from day to day. So they're not really activating us, and we end up missing them because they're not getting reported on and they're not getting read about.
If you're just joining us, Brian Walsh is our guest. He's the senior editorial director for Vox.com. And we're just talking about what it is about humanity that we love bad news so much. We were joking before we came on the air, Brian, about if you go on vacation and you come back and you say, our vacation was perfect, that's the end of the story, you know, right? You want to tell the story about we couldn't find where to drop off the car, so we missed the ferry and we were 5 hours late, right? Those are the things that we share. Those are the things that make stories.
Exactly. I mean, like, think of it like airplane travel, right? I mean, it's not much of a story if you got in the airplane, it took off, it landed, you got there more or less on time.
Right.
It's a story if it goes bad, if it gets delayed, and it's obviously a horrible story if something goes wrong. Of course, that's a great example of something that has improved quite a lot. Maybe not necessarily the getting there on time part, but definitely the safety part. I mean, air travel is so much, much more safer than it used to be a few decades ago. But again, that's not something we really think about.
Right.
We just sort of notice when it's going wrong. We notice when it's going catastrophically wrong, but we don't notice the day in, day out. Hey, wow, I can get in a plane and travel across the country in the same day and be totally fine.
I also feel like that type of situation is also connective tissue for people. Because if I say, if I'm sitting at a coffee table with you, Brian, and I say, I had a terrible flight, then you can say, oh my God, me too. I was the, and then all of a sudden it's a 45 minute conversation on how flights are, how our flights were terrible, how things mm-hmm. have changed, how everything is bad. And I remember the old days and like that. But if I, and as you said, if I just said, oh, I went to Toronto last week. The flight was good. Toronto is beautiful. Had some poutine, had some sushi, right. Came home. Then it's like 45 minutes of silence. Cause like, what are we going to talk about next? And do you feel like that translates to the news because that's who we are as people, or is the news or how we gather information from, say, whether it's traditional news sources or from online, it has influenced us and in how we communicate with each other?
Well, first of all, I hope you have the poutine and the sushi in separate meals.
Although I don't know. Don't tell me what how to live my life, kind of, Brian.
I would not dare to tell anyone in Wisconsin or Canada how they shoot the poutine. But I think, you know, I do think there's an element here where you identified something which is commiseration. And that is definitely true that we human beings, like, we like to sort of reinforce each other's negative stories. In fact, in some ways, that's probably like a social bonding thing.
Yes.
I'm from Philadelphia, and so I'm a big Philadelphia Eagles fan. We have an amazing ability to, even when things are good and you're winning, to find many, many, many terrible things about that. I'm sure other sports fans have the same experience, but we're just particularly known for it. But I also think when it comes to the sort of media ecosystem we're talking about, new kinds of media, social media especially, that's really has a negative inflection. And that's because I think you have a really tight feedback between people who are putting out stuff, seeing what the reaction is, and then shaping themselves to fit it.
Yes.
You know, other media companies like myself, like Vox, others, you know, we sort of learn from that to a certain extent. But really in social media, you see it, you know, you get the feedback right away, and there's an easy way to sort of get people's attention by either saying something is awful or going after someone. And it just, even though like no one likes actually being in that negative mindset, I think it's not a pleasant one. For some reason, it's something we can't seem to break out of, in part because we get a lot of reinforcement on the side that it's actually working.
Right, exactly. So if I'm a social media influencer and I come out with a negative story and that generates a whole bunch of clicks for me, I'm going to give you more of that.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah. And you will see that and you will benefit from it and it will just keep going and going. And the problem is then it becomes almost like a downward spiral race mm-hmm. to the bottom in terms of who can have the more negative attitude towards something, who can be nastier online, and next thing you know, you basically have the social media ecosystem that we all, you know, love and enjoy today.
Yeah.
Well, and I think there's also another component to that that's, it's not new, but it's so much more, I don't know what the exact word to use would be, but it's not just about reading the news story or watching the video, but now I, Joe, everybody can throw my comment into the vacuum that mm-hmm. is this video, this social media platform, and you know, we don't want to just throw those comments in for the moment. We want people to click like the comment. We want people to say, you're wrong. So I can say, well, you're stupid. And it doesn't help any, it never helps the conversation.
Let me tell you. It's a circular argument.
Yeah. And so like, it just feeds more and more to this thing of like, and of course, Brian, I'm right. Of course, my comments are right. You talk about Phil, the Eagles, Milwaukee Brewers fans are very good at looking at the bestest situations and saying, how will we mess this up? And all of my opinions are right. But I think that's another aspect too. It's not just the negative news story, or as you put in the article, the bias towards negative news stories, mm-hmm. but it's the fact that now we can become our own little pundits and reinforce that and keep that inner rage going. And I ask the question to all of you, any listeners, to Brian, to Jane, to Calvin, what does that help us as a people, as a human, when we do things like that? I don't think it's much, but it's where we're at.
Yeah, I don't think it helps much at all, really. I mean, it doesn't help in the sense of, let's say you actually want to change something for the better. I think there is a general sense, oh, you know, I have to highlight how bad things are before that can really make that change. And yeah, that's necessary to a certain extent, but especially when you're dealing with, say, really long-term difficult problems, something like climate change, for instance, there's exhaustion that can set in with that kind of relentless negativity or, you know, doom mongering that actually, I think, works against the idea of bringing people together to create positive change over the longer term. And so you end up with a situation where you're complaining about everything, it's not getting better because you've actually created an environment where you make it hard for positive change to happen, and then things keep getting worse, and in some ways your expectations are met. But the problem is you still are in a world where we could be making better change, and yet we hold ourselves back because we literally can't even recognize when good things are happening.
Yeah. And I think the other problem too is that, like, if I'm sitting in, and what you just said too, is if I sit down and I look at your comments, like you, Brian Walsh, commenting negative things, if that's what you're doing, if I say, well, here are some great programs you can do, most likely you're going to say to me, well, that's not going to work. It's not going to create a situation, as you said, Jane, a circular conversation where if I try to give you, here are some great options, here are people you can call, here's a new story that might give you a different side of it. Most likely when you go that deep in, you're not looking for answers or a conversation. You're just looking for people to
make your point
mm-hmm. for people to directly criticize you or to directly agree with you. That's how you exist. It's not about, and that's why when people ask they'll ask questions of, well, what do you think of this topic? I say, are you really interested in an answer, or do you just want to argue with me? Because if you just want to argue, mm-hmm. I'm not going to do this. But if you want to have a conversation, that's great. But I find that a lot of people just don't even want the conversation because climate change, way too nuanced.
Exactly.
If you're just joining us on Matt Nair on Air, our guest is Brian Walsh. He's the senior editorial director at Vox. He oversees the climate teams, also is the editor of Vox's Future Perfect section, and Brian writes the Good News newsletter. And we're going to get to that in just a little bit. But right now we are talking about what it is about bad news that we seem to love so much. Mm-hmm. And we've seen entire media ecosystems based mm-hmm. on outrage and continuing the outrage and feeding us the outrage, and we seem to like it.
Yes.
To our own detriment.
Regardless of the side on which you fall, whether it's politically or socially, we can all find our own places that can confirm our biases and say, see, I'm right. It's really just, mm-hmm. I want to be right. I want so desperately to be right. And please let me be right. And I'll go anywhere I can to be right. And I found this thing that made me right. I'm right.
Exactly. And I think what you end up happening is that you actually aren't right often. I mean, especially if you're talking about how the world really is. And a lot of that has to do with, do you have a sense of history? Do you understand where things used to be? Because if we're saying like something is bad or it's getting worse, we have to compare it to something else. And so, you know, we sort of, I think, forget in some ways how actually bad things used to be in very basic ways in this country, around the world, in the not too distant past. I mean, things as simple as like, how long did you live? You know, what was the chance of dying in violence? Were you getting a disease and dying of that? What were the levels of education? How common was democracy? I mean, all these things that, you know, go back 100 years. So you have a world that if you look at it through the eyes of now, you'd think, oof, this is bad. Like I could die of an infection because I don't have antibiotics. They haven't been invented yet. Same thing with a lot of vaccines, you know, much of the world was not remotely free. We've had social change, all these kind of things that happen. And something here is also like a bit of a baseline shift, because once a positive change happens, especially in the background, we kind of just take it for granted, stop appreciating it, and no longer take it into our calculations of how good the world is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's such a good point, Brian. It really is. Yeah. We just accept that as the norm then, right? If something is good, then that's the baseline.
Yeah, and I would say it says something about when people are trying to, and talking about the history of it all, is taking that history and trying to disappear, to say, everything's fine now, it's never been bad, we're good, be appreciative, don't look backwards because that didn't exist, it's all a lie, it doesn't help us appreciate what we have.
We're going to continue our conversation with Brian Walsh from Vox.com. Stay with us. You are listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. We will be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Box, Sweet Cal B on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. Join us at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up after the 10:30 news, a segment we call Audio Sorbet, where we get away from the news, do a little cleansing, collective breath, talk about sillier, lighter things.
So good news.
Good news. So we don't all crack up all the time. Our guest is Brian Walsh from Vox.com, and he has a great article called We're All Drawn to Bad News. Here is how to fight it. I guess, Brian, what you just heard, our little audio sorbet segment, that's one way that we try to fight it and find something amusing or lighthearted or silly to talk about for a change.
I think that's a great way to do it. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny, like I'm literally someone who has spent 24 or 5 years now as a professional journalist, and I've seen, you know, I mentioned social media, like in some ways, all of us are involved in the process of this now. And I have to say, maybe sometimes it's good to tune out. I mean, it's not exactly in my self-interest, I have to say.
Right.
And yet when you really think about it, I mean, you know, there's something weird about the fact that the news stays always the same. You know, which I mean, like there's always about the same amount of it. And while surely there are very important things that happen and less important things, I don't think people have to get really locked into everything all the time, especially if it has a really negative impact on their mood. I really think, like, even though it might make you think it's part of being a good citizen, it's good to step back. It's good to, you know, to encourage other parts of your life. You will be better off for it. So, you know, you could read less news, not on Vox.com, but otherwise definitely.
Ignore the other ones, just subscribe to Vox. You include this statistic in your article, the fact that 3 million people flew in and out of U.S. airports and none of them died in an accident. That's not news, while a single crash most definitely is. Right, we don't hear that every day. Day 427 of no fatal crashes. We don't do that.
No, we don't. And that really falls down to the media. I mean, it's not something we report on. You know, the term, what is it, a dog bites man story?
Yes. I mean,
what that means basically is like, yeah, no kidding, that there's actually zero surprise in that. So why would I report on it? Well, we've now gotten to a point where the fact that planes are flying all the time, incredibly safe, is a dog bites man story. So why would you report on it? But there's a lot of other things like that, too. I think, you know, the fact that we've seen child mortality around the world declined so sharply over the last 25 years, the fact that we've seen, you know, global poverty fall as well, the fact that even here in this country, like we continue to see economic growth. I mean, it has a lot of imperfections, but it's a system that in some ways has been working better, I think, than we realize. But again, like we're not looking at the stuff that is just like 2% better, 2% better, 2% better every year. We're looking for the things that are surprising. Those are the things that get your attention. And often surprising and bad, that's like gold when it comes to getting eyeballs.
I think another thing too you spoke about when we came back was, you know, the taking in all of the information as much as, and the three of us, our business is being educated on what's going on in for us, Wisconsin and the world. For you, it's all over the world. But I think that also there's a cachet now that if you're not up to every single news story, you somehow can be seen as ill-informed, when it's almost impossible because there's too much news. People have lives, and you should give yourself grace and saying, all right, here are the things that I believe in, or here are the things that I really want to be involved in. Be up to speed on that. But there's no special jacket you're given for knowing all the news all the time and having a nuanced opinion. So give yourself a little break on maybe not knowing some things, because it's okay. You can find it out, but it's not necessary to be cool.
You mean I'm not going to get a pin?
You'll get.
There's no pin involved.
I'll give you a pin. Fine. Keep on bringing up the pin.
All right, fine. Brian Walsh.
Maybe a tote bag or some
ooh,
sort.
Ooh, a tote would
I
be.
I love ooh. A good. You know what you can put in tote bag? I know poutine.
I know too much news. Tote. That would be great. Brian Walsh, senior editorial director at Vox. We're talking about why we are so drawn to bad news. You are doing a good news column, Brian. What are some of the things we can look forward to about reading about on the good side of life?
Yes. Well, I mean, it really varies from, there's a lot I do that's in really amazing stories around medical research that you hear about, really exciting things, and something like being able to gene edit infants to cure diseases. So I love to focus on that. I really love when I'm sort of doing something that's a bit of a narrative violation. So a piece I did a while back was on how violent crime around the U.S. was actually declining incredibly quickly in most places. In fact, in cities like Philadelphia, where I come from, it was on a track to be a record low. And then now we're seeing that globally as well. So I kind of mix and match between really interesting scientific advances I think people should know about that will actually improve their lives one day, and then sometimes bigger global ones. A piece I did most recently, I thought, frankly, was pretty interesting, was about washing machines. And the fact that when you go back, like, again, about 100 years, when people said laundry day, they actually meant a whole day.
Yeah.
Because that's what you'd have to do.
Yeah. Like,
heating the water, doing the wash, putting it out there, so forth. Added up to hours of work. Now, something like, I think 85% of Americans have a washing machine. The ones who don't probably have a laundromat. That's a lot of time you get back. It's almost like it's a time machine. And half of the world actually does not have that right now. They'd love to have those things. So it's stuff like that. And I just want to say one other thing, which is, talk about the news. The kind of work that you two do is actually really important here, because one thing I think is that's helpful to get a better sense of the world is actually to pay more attention to what's happening in your local area. In fact, there's always this big division between, you might ask Americans like, is violent crime getting worse in the country? They'll say, yes, definitely. But if you ask them about their own town, mm-hmm. often they have a much more accurate picture of it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, one issue here is like we've gotten so nationalized around our attention and media that gives us a much more warped impression of what's going on, whereas we do know and can know more about what's happening to our neighbors or our town, our cities. And I think we should pay more attention to that, actually.
Brian Walsh is the senior editorial director at Vox. You can find him and read his column about good news.
It will be in the show notes.
At Vox.com. Thank you so much for your time, Brian. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Stay with us. News is next. And then Audio Sorbet. We're talking outside Christmas lights. That's coming up. You're listening to Matt Mayer on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back to Matt Mayer on Air, Jane Matt Mayer, Greg Bach, Dr. Slide on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us, 855-752-4842. You can also leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. We are welcoming and so happy to have him back in studio with us. Paul Trebian from the Holiday Folk Fair is here for our Audio Sorbet segment, where we get away from the news and talk about lighter, more pleasant things. Good to see you again, Paul. Thanks so much
for
coming down here.
Great to be here. Yeah.
Holiday Folk Fair kicks off on Friday. This is happening at the Expo Center at State Fair Park in West Dallas. What's new? Well, I want to talk. We were talking off the air a little bit about the Holiday Folk Fair and your daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And explain your background a little bit and the tribe to which you belong.
Well, I'm part of the Tlingit tribe, Southeast Alaska. Juneau is the area. That's our homeland. And my daughter decided to move up there to be next to my mom, her grandma.
Oh, wow.
To help take care of her. My grandmother is 91 or 92 now. And so and my daughter's an artist, a formal artist. And so she decided to pick up additional training at the University of Alaska Southeast Juneau. And she's becoming what I would call a cultural guardian. I mean, she's learning all of the different media, weaving, the beadwork, the wood carving, the line art, and the language. And she's really good, better than I am with
is
the
she
language.
Really?
Yes.
And that's something that did you grow up speaking that in the house?
A little bit.
A little bit.
When I was growing up, there was a big push to learn English very, very much. And now there's a surge to preserve culture. And the best way to preserve culture is to preserve language, you know, like,
yes.
That's my intro. Long sea faring bird, shark clan, eagle house, my mother's dot kutis. And my daughter corrects me on that now. So she says, you need to speak a little bit with the sneaky sounds, and also the wording is a little different, Dad.
Oh, that is hilarious. So, did she? Paul.
Well, actually, Dad, you must have. But I mean, that's something that's, you know, and I hesitate to believe anything I hear on social media, but something I have heard, and please feel free to either confirm or deny, that the preservation of native language, native art, the growth of as a population has grown and gotten better over the past few years than where it was many years ago. I mean, is that, I know that it's a start, but is that where you're at, and how do you see that? How did you see that happening over the years? Like, what were the catalysts to making sure that you would ensure your culture and its growth?
Well, I would actually say in my entire lifetime, it's totally changed. Mm-hmm. When I was young, it was shunned upon to wear regalia.
Sure.
I'll be a little dark here at first. You could wear your colors and the regalia I'm wearing, and there was laws to put you in jail.
Oh, my gosh.
And so as I grew up, the you know, we have a lot of negativity with the government. But the government actually, over the years, when I've been growing up, mm-hmm. and now I'm up there in years, has changed all that. And throughout all of those prejudicial laws and racist laws, and we created a celebration in 1980. That was back in 1980, mm-hmm. Where every even year, the first weekend in June, the tribes come to Haida, Tlingit, Tsimshian, and then Pacific Islanders come to Alaska to celebrate the culture, mm-hmm. song, dance, storytelling, show off regalia. We cordon off a street and have a little parade, and it's just absolutely wonderful. So we feel free to express ourselves. At'u, art, very tied to our culture. It's about remembering. It's not about worshiping. It's about remembering.
Sure, mm-hmm. and honoring. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And honoring mother and father. Yep. It's a matrilineal society. So by you commenting when I came through the door, it was wonderful to see the regalia. You're actually honoring my mother. So gunish sheesh, that's thank you and Tlingit for honoring my mother.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. It really is. I hope you're watching in the live stream so you can get a look at this. Paul Trebian is here from the Holiday Folk Fair, which kicks off this Friday at the Expo Center in West Dallas, for Friday from 2 to 9, Saturday from 10 to 9, and Sunday from 10 to 6. What are some of the new things that are going to be here this year?
Well, we always try to have some familiarity, so the layout is the same and whatnot, and many of the culture groups are repeats, which is wonderful. They're very professional, good song and dance. But we do have a professional group coming from Poland, and we also have another group coming from Utah. And so be on the lookout for them. We have some new food booths that I can't remember off the top of my head. There's so many.
There are
lots
of food.
an empty stomach.
Bring an appetite, yeah. Because you're going to need it.
Yeah, the struggle is real. My biggest problem is going to be resisting all the desserts. I love anything chocolate.
Yeah.
Well, you have food demonstrations, mm-hmm. and Saturday you can learn how to make dill pickle soup.
Which day that?
That is Saturday, 11 a.m.
Here we go.
Polish Center. He's from the Polish Center. Dill pickle soup.
Here we go.
You can kolaches. Trevisio and troublemakers, all kinds of stuff going on. We will include a link in our show notes to the Holiday Folk Fair if you want to check out some of the things that are going to be available. A couple of years ago, my sister and I went specifically to see some of the dance. It's fantastic, just because it's like a little sampler plate of all these different cultures, mm-hmm. and the music is so different, and the interpretation is so different, and the mm-hmm. costuming and everything. It's a really wonderful exposure to all these different cultures.
With all the strife and everything that we're feeling, it's a great place to come to release all that, discover who you are, discover mm-hmm. other cultures, who they are, discover the similarities, find out what the differences are, and then at the big leap is to celebrate our differences. It makes us richer, fuller, solves more problems, and it starts with who we are, our identity. So
I couldn't agree with you more on that. I think about that topic so much in today's society. I feel like if and I'm going to stick to America, if we as Americans really looked at where we come from, who are not just our relatives are, but our ancestors, their struggle when they came here to America, their struggle from where they came from. If we looked at those things, if we looked at and then looked at our art and our music and our dance and our food and the way families celebrate each other and the way families take care of each other, I feel like you have this great patchwork to come together and say, oh, we're kind of all in this together. And we all, to a certain extent, have similar stories to an extent, which should breed mm-hmm. empathy and breed commonality and the desire to come together and say, I don't know your life story, but I know my story. And I know that my family went through struggles. You did. Let's try to do something together. And then also let's eat some great food. You know, I think the Holiday Folk Fair, while being a great time to celebrate and have a good time, can also give you self-reflection on where do you come from? How much do you know about your history? And when you do find out, how can you apply that to being I don't want to say a better person, but being just a more empathetic, contributing more.
Well, and it's about the connectivity between yes. all of us, yes. right? Mm-hmm. Because right. we have a lot more common threads mm-hmm. than our politics would like us to believe.
I think that you can discover ways where this commonality can solve some of that inner angst that we mm-hmm. all have of the division that we experience at some point in time. To know that we can do things together and mm-hmm. we can celebrate together. And yeah. like you said, the dance with all the traditional dress, there's so much meaning behind each stitch that yes. they have in their dress.
Yes.
And the steps that they take and the music they have. And the theme this year is, you know, celebrate the culture of traditional music. So hopefully we'll be able to show off instruments. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a great place to say, you know what? I think I'm going to try to pick that up. That's part of my culture.
Yeah.
Never too late to learn things.
Absolutely. I absolutely
knowledge
agree.
Is power. Yep. It's good for you. I'm just looking at the list of all the different food that you can get there. It's a long list. You can check out things Afghani, Burmese, mm-hmm. Chinese, Croatian, Czech, Donnerschwaben. Mm-hmm. German?
It's wonderful.
Is it?
That's one of the reasons why you should come each day, yeah. because there's so much food to experience.
Yeah.
Donnerschwaben has assorted cookies, assorted torts, and apple and cherry strudels.
Paul's downfall, the dessert.
Ethiopian, Filipino, God. French, Hmong, Indian, Irish, Italian, Japanese, Rohingya, which was new just within the last couple of years, Sengalese, South Korean, Thai, Ugandan, and Ukrainian. So there's something for everybody to eat.
I can't speak to all of those cuisines, but I can tell you that your life will be much richer and much better when you get Ethiopian food in your life. It is so delicious. And also, if you go to a real Ethiopian restaurant, it's all about family. You sit down together. You eat
more
as a family meal. Jenny on the live stream says something that's very close to my heart because this is what happened for me as well. I remember going to it as a little girl on a field trip and loved the folk fair. Does the event still hand out passports to get stamped at each destination? That's what we did as a kid. That was a yearly field trip was coming to the folk fair in Milwaukee.
Yes, we do.
You do?
Yes, we do. And I like how they're printed out. They're very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is something that's so special. I love it when Education Day comes about, and I think it's real important for our young ones to learn about mm-hmm. where they have come from.
Yeah,
because it helps them deal with the present, and also when you draw a line between the past and the present, an action from the past, action the present, it gives you a direction. Now you don't have to worry about what am I going to do. Mm-hmm. You look at that value that you find, and it helps you find direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul Trebian is here from the Holiday Folk Fair, which kicks off this Friday at the Expo Center at State Fair Park in West Dallas. Just a couple of minutes left. What do kids ask you? I'm just really curious. What do they ask you about your regalia when they see you?
Oh, well, the first question I usually get is like, where did you get it? And
can I get that on Amazon?
And,
right.
and I go, well, I got this from my mother in Alaska. She made it for me. Oh, your mother made it. So how long did it take her? You know, and I said, many months. And there's a lot of love in each one of the stitches and each of the beadwork. And then they ask about my mother, and mm-hmm. they say, well, Is your mother like my mother? You know, the little ones. And I go, yes, my mother just loves me just like your mother loves you.
And she scolded me too.
Yes, right? That's right. Do the dishes.
Listen to your daughter. She's trying to help you with the pronunciations.
That's right.
Yeah.
Check out the Holiday Folk Fair. It is a wonderful, wonderful family tradition in southeastern Wisconsin. Again, happening at the Expo Center at State Fair Park in West Dallas this Friday from 2 to 9. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. What are ticket prices?
Oh, they're 13, but you can go on folkfair.org and you can get advanced prices, mm-hmm. and then you can also get it at the door. So
we will include that link in our show notes. Paul Trebian with the Holiday Folk Fair. Thank you so very much, Paul. It's always a delight seeing you.
Tell your mother in Alaska that there are two fans of her work right here in Wisconsin. We love it. We love seeing it. Love seeing you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Stay with us. When we return, we'll wrap up the show with this Shouldn't Be a Thing Space Metal Edition. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Awesome.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, Sweet Calby on the board, coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine, where you can join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching in the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Coming up on the show tomorrow, it is Thursday already, so Jim Santel, host of Amicus, a law review, is going to be joining us after the 9:30 news.
And what are we going to talk about, Jane?
Oh, there's just a couple things to talk about. Things are not going very well for the Trump administration in court, especially some of Trump's personally selected lawyers. Wow. Some of the judges and what they're saying about these attempts by these Trump lawyers, mm-hmm. it's pretty astonishing. Jim Santel will join us to break some of that stuff down. We're going to talk all things sports in hour number two. Paul Noonan will be here from the Acme Packing Company to talk all things sports. So I hope you can join us tomorrow morning for that. Right now, though, it is 10:54 Calvin. That means it's time for
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
If you ever find a thing you think this should not be, send it in to Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us, JaneSays. janesays@civicmedia.us. This from the Associated Press. Rod McQuirk has the headline. It reads, Australian prisoner sues for his human right to eat Vegemite.
Jane, have you ever had Vegemite?
No, and I've heard it's very much an acquired taste.
I have only heard Australians speak highly of Vegemite.
They're the only ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. They are by far the only ones.
Yeah.
This happened in Australia. A prisoner challenging Australia's ban on inmates eating Vegemite, saying that withholding this breaches his human right to enjoy his culture as an Australian. Vegemite is a yeast-based spread.
Ugh.
I know. 54-year-old Andrew McKenzie is serving a life sentence for murder. Took his battle to court. Most Australians revere Vegemite as unfairly maligned. More than 80% of Australian households are believed to have a jar of Vegemite in their pantries. Inmates, though, in all 12 prisons in Victoria, Australia, are going without. The case is actually going to go to trial next year.
Okay. Couple questions. One, from what I understand, Vegemite is a fairly common foodstuff in Australia. So yes. It surprises me that the prison wouldn't have it. Like, I imagine prisons have, like, butter and condiments. So I don't understand why it wouldn't have Vegemite.
It says that Vegemite contains yeast, which is banned in those prisons because it could be used in the production of alcohol.
They've never had toilet wine. So,
well, apparently not. Man representing this inmate says that is not possible. He rejects reports that inmates are using Vegemite to brew alcohol. So they say that's not happening, but that's why it's not there. They have banned it from prisons, no Vegemite since 2006, because it interferes with drug detecting dogs. Inmates used to smear packages of illicit drugs with Vegemite, hoping the smell would distract the dogs.
Listen, mate, I just want to put some Vegemite on my toast. I don't want to escape. I'm out of appeals. All I want is to enjoy that wonderful savory spread on my toast in the morning. Please give me my Vegemite.
Nice Australian. Nice.
Thank you
Aussie
very much. This is the third time we're
getting better and better.
This is the third Australian Tisbat in 2 weeks, so it's only going to get better or worse, or I should say better or more offensively Australian.
You're doing pretty good.
Also, the whole thing
doesn't that just indicate how bad that stuff smells?
Yeah.
If they're smearing it on drugs to confuse drug detecting dogs, that must be some pretty powerful stuff.
But I will say here, I just looked it up. It said Vegemite tastes strongly salty, bitter, and savory with malty, yeasty flavor, often compared to a beef bouillon or dark soy sauce. That doesn't sound bad at all. In fact, I have to go to the store after this, and if they have Vegemite, I'm buying some, and I will report back tomorrow. I swear to God. I feel like in Australia, they love their Vegemite. In England, they love their Marmite. And I just want to, you know, honestly, we should have thought of some other things. Like, what would American prisoners call a human right to have? They're like, I want Cool Ranch Doritos. They should be mine.
Either something Cool Ranch or pizza related.
Yeah, or just ranch. Access to ranch sauces.
Just access to ranch.
Yeah, exactly. I demand the right to make a bigger waistline in prison. So I would like all of the Jell-O, all the colors. But yeah.
Well, and I guess we should thank the band Men at Work, because I think that was the first time a lot of us had heard even the term Vegemite from their song Down Under.
Artists and informers. Just look, they really, the cultural just representatives. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Don't get enough credit. Yeah. That wraps up today's episode of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Terry on the live stream says, I've tried Vegemite. It's nasty. We'll go with that.
Thank you,
Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers and everyone at Civic, because without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and texting and watching on the live stream and for listening. It means the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. Keep it right here. We have news coming up next. We will be back with you tomorrow right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great day.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.